Revelation 5:12 reads, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and wealth and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing." Hello and welcome back to Think This Way. This is the podcast of Faith Bible Church. As always, I am your host, Pastor Bryce. Today I have with me a fellow evangelist, meaning one who does evangelize, although I don't know, is that technically your spiritual gift? I don't know. You're a pastor teacher.
I have 9 spiritual gifts.
Oh, wow.
They are love, joy, peace, patience, okay. Kindness.
Hey, that's good. Look at that, man.
I also have this gift. I found out that I can determine people's inner thoughts and motives.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Speaking of editing podcasts, John. Right. Just kidding.
No, I'm just kidding about that one. No, especially good. My own. I always say, like, what's my motivation in this?
Yeah, no. That's hard enough.
Yeah.
Well, it's Mike.
It is me.
It's Mike. He's with us today.
We just sang that verse Sunday, by the way. Oh. Worthy is the, you know, song.
Oh, yeah, Lamb. We did sing the Revelation song. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's drawn, I mean, that's this text. It's called the Revelation song.
It is.
Revelation 5:12, where there's, I think it's angels saying this in heaven. Ooh. It's a beautiful picture. The reason we've started with that verse today is because we're continuing to talk about evangelism. We've had several episodes talking about why not to evangelize, the things that typically keep us from it. It'll be painful. You might be considered, quote, one of those Christians, Bible thumpers, and then you might not feel ready. But now we're going to switch and focus on why you should evangelize. And it's, again, there are 3 parts to that. For God, which is today. For others, just next time. And for yourself, which we'll talk about later as well. But that means today we're talking about why do we evangelize? Why should you evangelize? Because the Lamb is worthy. The title of this podcast, because God deserves it and for God's glory. I've got a few things to say real briefly, and then I just have questions for you, Mike.
I have answers for you, Bryce.
Good. That's what I was hoping would be the case.
I'm going to depend on the fruit of the Spirit there.
Right? If you didn't have answers, this would be awkward. So, so let's just see. I did want to start. So we're talking about God's glory being a motivation for evangelism, and even being, I want to say, our primary motivation for evangelism, which ties in with what you taught recently in Sunday school, actually.
First commandment, right?
Yeah, it's the first. So there's 2, love God, love your neighbor, and that order is specific. So even with evangelism, it comes first from a love for God, which we're talking about today. This did make me think, it's a little bit different, but it made me think about a time I was listening to Paul Washer, the missionary. He's head of Heart Cry Missions now.
Spoke here once.
Did he speak here?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I forgot. It was before my time.
Yep.
So,
it's back when Casey was over CEO. That's how long ago it was.
Okay. Long time. Yeah, long time. Well, Paul Washer, I remember one time he was talking about when he had first become a missionary, and he was in Peru. He was a single man at the time. And he went there, and, you know, he had had a very radical conversion from just party life in college or whatever. And so he said he was determined to be not a good Christian. He was determined to be the best Christian. That's what his determination was, the best Christian.
Better than Paul.
Huh? But he's Paul Washer. He's going to be the very best.
New Paul.
Yeah. And so he said what that meant was in Peru, he was working 18 hours a day. He was not eating. He was fasting all the time. He was doing, I think that's what he had talked about. He said, yeah, he lost a lot of weight. He said he would basically try to be martyred. I mean, he's just like as radical as he could possibly be. And that went on for a while. And then he said one day he was in his building where he lived in Peru.
There
was
already messing up if he has a home, right?
Well,
he should not have a home.
He was upstairs in a building that I think they used to reach like street kids or something.
Okay,
so,
okay.
You know,
you
he
go.
Was the best Christian.
Yes.
And there was a war going on in Peru. And so I think that building housed the church as well. So he's in the middle of this war zone, street kids helping them. And he's doing everything he can. And he says he was on the stairs and he just collapsed. And this was his thought, he said. His thought was, I don't want to go to hell. But also, I don't want to go to heaven because I'm ashamed. And so his prayer to God was, just put me somewhere. And he said in that moment, you know, at the end of himself, he had tried to be the very most perfect Christian, like Luther, like Paul the Apostle, like, you know, try to be perfect, the best Christian, and just couldn't do it and was exhausted and felt like he was falling short. And so he feels like, I can't even go to heaven. I'd just be ashamed to be there. And he said what happened after that was, at the end of himself, is when God really helped him to grasp the fact that God loved him apart from what he did or would do, that he didn't have to be the best Christian. Hmm. He could be the worst Christian. But God just loved him, and that was hugely freeing for him to grasp that concept. The reason I bring up that story right now is, I mean, he was doing evangelism. He's in Peru. He's in a hard place doing missions, really, pouring himself out. I don't doubt that he had a love for the people he was trying to serve. But when he got to the end of himself and was just crushed by the weight of his responsibility and failure, it was thoughts of God, ultimately, that helped him, that revived him, that motivated him to keep going. That's what we're talking about today. And specifically with evangelism, we certainly should have a love for others, which we'll talk about next week. That's a motivation.
But second commandment.
Second commandment. But love first, as yourself. Yeah, yep, as yourself. But first commandment, first motivation is what we're talking about here. God. Vertical. Love for God, sense of his glory to motivate us. And hence the Revelation 5:12 we started with. Why do we evangelize? Because the Lamb who was slain to make salvation possible, he's worthy. He deserves it. And that puts our focus on him, not us. Okay. That's my little bit. Now I've got questions.
Hold on, let me ask you a question first.
Yeah, yeah, go for it.
We're just trying to guess here because we don't know Paul Washer's thoughts. Although, like I said, I do have the gift of inner thoughts, but I'm just kidding. I don't. But whenever he felt like, I don't want to go to hell, I mean, do you feel like, so I'm guessing he's doing some sort of performance-centered obedience. What do you think? Mm-hmm. He's thinking like he has to earn God's favor.
I
because why else would he think I'm going to go to hell?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, since I wasn't there. I mean, certainly if you don't persevere as a Christian, it's evidence you're not a believer.
Yeah.
And so maybe that was his. But no doubt, I mean, it was very performance driven.
Yeah, for sure. Trying to be the best.
Yeah. Trying to be the best Christian.
That's a weird motivation.
You know, doesn't
like
work.
You kind of missed the whole point of Christianity being serving anyway. It's like,
that's
you're definitely the best. You're like those two brothers. I'm watching The Chosen right now.
Oh, yeah.
And their mom was just putting them up, asked if you could be on the right and the left, right? And Jesus is like, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. Well, as we get into some of these questions, which these are a little harder of questions, but I have full confidence, Mike, in your answers here.
Hmm.
So here's the first one.
You have a false confidence.
Okay. Okay. I no longer have confidence in your ability, but let's see what happens. Number one is we're talking about keeping a vertical focus in evangelism.
Yeah.
And I'll just say that's hard to do. For me, it's easy for me to think about myself when I'm evangelizing because I'm going, am I doing a good job? It's easy for me to think about the person I'm evangelizing to, thinking, do they like this? Do they not? Are they angry? Are they happy?
And you care about that person. That's why you're doing it, right? You have a genuine concern for them.
So even a good reason to be thinking about them.
That's a great motivation.
I find those easier, I guess, because you can see them.
Yeah.
And you know yourself. What I find difficult is what we're talking about today, a vertical focus on God fueling my evangelism. So how do we keep that focus? How do we keep a focus on God as a motivation for evangelism?
It's good. That's a good question. And I don't think it's a hard question. In fact, for me, I feel like it's a very easy question only because I am not a confident person, right? I know myself, zero confidence in myself, right? I know if it's left for me to have to do it right, it's not going to be done very well. So in evangelism, I was just telling you, I was just sharing you that I was able to just share my testimony this morning. This afternoon with one of my bosses. But it's that, you know, I know that all I'm doing is planting a seed. Like, I can't convince anybody of the gospel. It's foolishness to those who are perishing, right? Mm-hmm. It's just planting a seed. I'm just presenting the truth, you know, in my own inadequate way. And then if God uses that, God saves that person. There's absolutely nothing in us. You know what I mean? It's all God. And so to me, that's the easiest way to think about it. But you know what I mean? It's like all vertical. It's just, I know that it's God that's going to do the saving. So all I have to do is just be faithful and present the seed.
That's interesting because a criticism that sometimes has been leveled against a high view of God's sovereignty, which we certainly hold to.
For sure.
A criticism leveled against it is if you tell people that God is fully in control, people won't evangelize because it's scary and hard to evangelize. And if you believe God's so much in control, he could do it without you, then why not let him do it without you? And people won't evangelize. And what is interesting is what you just said. You evangelized today. because you have a high view of God's sovereignty. So what you would think might demotivate people, I've found consistently, is actually very motivating to know I'm sharing the gospel. It's what I need to do, but I'm doing it because I know God is so sovereign and so powerful. And so, yeah, he could reach and save this person without me. But what's even more amazing than that is he could reach and save this person through me, which is crazy to think.
No doubt.
Well, this next question as just a follow-up. We're saying that this vertical focus is our primary motivation for evangelism.
God's glory.
God's glory. And a lot of times in evangelism and missions, we do have an emphasis on, like, think of the people who are perishing. And that's right. I mean, that's right. But not enough long-term of a motivation, compassion for others by itself. So we're saying the primary motivation, the thing that keeps us sharing the gospel ultimately, is a passion for God's glory, vertical focus. Now, a lot of things motivate us. Why is it that God's glory should motivate us the most? What is it about his glory that motivates us the most and keeps us evangelizing when other motivations fail?
Man, that's a good question. You know, I heard this once, and I can't remember the theologian's name. I remember reading this, but he was talking about how it's really hard for us to define God's glory, right? How do you define God's glory? It's because God's glory is in all of his attributes, right? His goodness, but he is infinitely good, right? He is good over everything and always good. So he's gloriously good or sovereign. He's sovereign over everything. He's gloriously sovereign. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
And so if you think about that, I mean, it just overflows out of you. I was telling you just a couple weeks ago, I was doing a meditation on the sacrifice of Christ, but his sacrifice as my friend. The fact that he is my friend and he went to the cross for me as a friend. And now I know that, you know, he's done all this for me. And I know what he delights in, which is for us to share this good news. So why would I not want to delight my friend and do good things for him, right? Mm-hmm. If I knew that Bryce loves when I come over, if I bring him a Coke Zero, I would always bring him a Coke Zero, right?
Thanks,
why would
man.
I not?
Thanks.
When I go to visit some friends that live out of town, they love Donut Bank Long Johns. So we always bring Donut Bank Long Johns, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good picture. When you talk about him as your friend, like that meditation, you know, what is it about him as your friend that's motivating? There's just a beauty in that. There's just a rightness and a glory and a goodness that we would have a God who would be our friend.
A friend so good that he would give up everything for you, right? And now why would you not want to recipiate that to your friend?
Yeah. I mean, almost a parallel. I'm gonna speak in foreign terms here because this isn't like my realm, but I do think of people's zeal for their sports teams, you know, and what does a person gain? So if you're I feel like, is it dangerous to name a team because someone doesn't like that? Let's just say the Colts because we're in Indiana. So if someone's a Colts fan, you know, and they are just passionate about the Colts, what do they gain by putting bumper stickers on and wearing the jerseys and telling other people all about this? Because they're not on the team.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't have a real vested interest in any way except they like the team. And that's really the whole motivation, is they just think it's a great team. Like, they're tied in with that team because it's glorious, you know, especially if the team's doing well. I don't know if the Colts are. I don't know. But, you know, but if your team's doing well, you're excited about it. That's probably the parallel we're talking about when you have a, like you said, take all of God's attributes and see that they're all perfect and they're the best they could be. And when you get a glimpse of that glory of a perfectly good God, a perfectly righteous God, and you see that, it's almost like the sports fans where you're just like, I want to tell people. I mean, this is amazing. Like, why? I don't know. You just see the glory and you're like, do you see the glory? Look at this glory.
Right.
It's amazing. Yeah. Well, this last question, if the first two are difficult, is even more difficult, but it's our final one. And this is, okay, some of what we're talking about can feel a little abstract here. So let's take it to the ground where someone wants to share the gospel. Could be a coworker, a family member, a friend,
neighbor.
They want to tell them about this glorious God, about Jesus, what he's done on the cross, but they're just finding it really hard. They're scared or just finding it hard. How do thoughts about God's glory practically get them across that pain line over the hill to where they're actually sharing the gospel?
That's good. That kind of makes me think of what we just talked about with either performance-centered obedience versus acceptance-centered obedience. You know, if you know that everything God has done for you and you're completely accepted and there's nothing you're doing to earn his favor. I mean, he's imputed Christ's righteousness to your account. You know, he sees Christ. So that's done. It's like the story in Acts. We were just talking about this, where the apostles, right? They're presenting, you know, they're out in the temple, they're sharing the gospel, and they get arrested. They get thrown in jail that night. An angel comes and frees them, tells them to go back and preach. So they're doing that. You know, they wake up, the doors are locked, the guards are still there, but here they are out of prison. They're like, I don't know what happened. And so they arrest him again, they bring him forth, and then they're like, you know, we told you not to do this. And they were like, should we be obedient to you or men, or to God or to men? I mean, we're going to be obedient to God. Because if you think about their, and so anyway, they end up getting beaten, and then they go off rejoicing, still preaching the gospel, right? They rejoice that they were counted worthy to be beaten like Jesus in a sense, you know what I mean? And I was thinking about, as far as friendship goes, you know, these are guys that lived with Jesus. They know Jesus. Mm-hmm. They know everything he gave up for them, everything he did for them in serving them. And now that is their primary motivation, right? This is their friend, their actual friend who did all this. And now how could they not reciprocate? They're like, we know exactly who Jesus was, and we know that he's also God. You know what I mean? And now how could we possibly obey you over him? You know, we're going to do anything he asks us to do.
Yeah.
That's our motivation, right? The glory of God.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. Well, thank you, Mike, for answering these questions for us.
You're welcome, Bryce.
They were not nothing. They were something. They were good.
This whole podcast was something.
It really was something. Well, you who are listening to this, you know, maybe you're in a similar situation where you feel low confidence in your evangelism. And so maybe that's kept you in the past from sharing the gospel because you just don't feel confident to do it. Or it might be that in evangelism, your total focus is yourself and the other person, and so you've not felt incredibly motivated to be sharing the gospel. Whatever the case in the past may have been, may God help us all now to think this way.